Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Ed Vinicum, the founder of UXClub.com, and we are going to talk about the way they produce their amazing video training. This episode is brought to you by Balsamic Mockups. Balsamic Mockups is rapid wireframing software that combines the comfort and simplicity of paper sketching with the power of a digital tool, so your work is easier to share, revise, and get honest feedback on. Try it free for 30 days at balsamic.com. Hey, Ed.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thrilled to have you here.
Thank
you. We're going to start with a small questionnaire so that we can learn about your persona before we dive into the main topic.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
So, Ed, what do you do for a living?
For a living, I am a UX designer. I've been working as a UX designer for about 11 years now, and I currently work full-time for a company in Brighton called ClearLeft, who are a user-centered design agency. And then on the side, I run and manage UXClub.com.
Sounds great. I just checked out a ClearLeft website and it looks pretty amazing.
They've been around for quite a while. They've got a few guys there that have kind of on the speakers scene, and they do some really incredible work. They're really cool people. Well, bunch of people to work for. Really relaxed atmosphere. It's really nice. Really nice environment.
So since we're going to be talking about UX Club, can you tell a bit more what that is and what it's about?
Sure. So I suppose I'll start from the top, really, like why I started UXClub.com. I guess UX Club kind of came out, it kind of came out of the frustration of, wanting to learn a little bit more about the UX industry initially, and this was maybe about, 2, maybe 3 years ago. And to do so, required, taking a course or an offline course with either, people like General Assembly, Coursera, all sorts of companies. And this could cost, upwards of, 2,000, 3,000, even like £5,000 at the time. And, you had to like get on a waiting list or there would be enrollment fees and things like this. And at the time, I just remember thinking that is an incredible amount of money to be spending on learning about UX. So, it's just like clearly wasn't fair, especially having to like get on a waiting list and get there in time for all of this content as well. It was just really, it seemed really unfair and it seemed like a bit of a mess. So, a few years down the line, once I had sort of worked for a few companies and gotten a lot of experience under my belt, I decided to try and do something about that and launch UXClub.com, which would kind of attack that opportunity of giving people some UX knowledge, but for a much fairer and reasonable price. So instead of £3,000, £4,000, they could subscribe for a much more reasonable monthly fee, similar to like the Spotify model, something like $9 a month or $86 a year, which is what we charge. So the idea of UX Club pretty much was born out of that. Is, a mixture of a frustration of, training or current training environment in the UX industry and, just sort of seeing that opportunity there. So we started UX Club in December 2016. And since then, it's gone on to be quite, a home for a lot of UX designers in the industry, especially for people just sort of like wanting to sort of dip their toe into UX design, maybe wanting to learn a little bit more, maybe wanting to improve their existing skill set. And it's been a really, really interesting journey since then.
Question number two is, how did you get there? And since we already kind of reviewed the background of UX Club, can you tell me a bit more about your early days before that? How did you evolve as a designer?
Sure. So how did I evolve a designer? So yeah, that's quite a broad question. So I've worked in numerous companies. I started off my career as a traditional web designer, which would involve a lot of like front end code and design at the same time. And then I sort of moved to London pretty much as soon as I started my career, really. I'd only worked as a web designer for 2 years and then went straight to London. And I worked up in London for 5 years as a UX designer and product designer. So I was kind of doing a bit of everything. And then as the kind of UX industry was evolving a little bit, I started to take a little bit more interest in doing that. And my role at these companies slowly evolved with that trend in the industry. So, you know, this was years ago now. So, you know, I've sort of worked in those companies. I started working in an agency called LBI in London, which is known for its sort of appreciation of the UX industry. So I worked there for a year and then I moved back down to Brighton and now I'm working as a UX designer in a user-centered design studio down here as well. So I suppose how I've evolved as a designer, I've always kind of immersed myself with designers who are trying to accomplish a similar sort of thing to me, and I've always tried to learn from people around me and, you know, just tried to keep my ears open, really. But I suppose, you know, it's been quite a journey to get to this point, but I think, you know, there's still plenty left to learn as well, and that's the beauty of UX Club as well. The more I learn, the more I can sort of share with our users as well. So it's killing two birds with one stone.
Great. What does your typical day look like?
So my typical day, well, it's I sort of start up maybe, you know, 7-8 a.m. have a tea, check my UX Club emails. You know, normally before I get to work, it's you know, it's going to be UX Club stuff, so getting that balance between UX Club and full-time work can be quite tricky. But typically, you know, before I start work, lunchtimes after work can be UX Club stuff. And then at the weekends, it's more UX Club stuff. So any spare moment I've got really is spent developing UX Club. So it uses up a lot of my spare time. Then when I'm at work, obviously, you know, it's just, you know, business as usual work, really, to be honest. At the moment, I'm working on a few projects up in London, and that uses up a lot of my time. But if, you know, at the weekends, I tend to typically, you know, film a lot of content as well, which uses up a lot of energy. So we film at a local film studio and, you know, that takes a lot of time to prepare that as well. So generally, yeah, very, very busy. I don't really have much spare time to sleep or eat or things like that.
Oh, but yeah, to great results, though.
yeah, it's getting there slowly.
What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
With UX Club stuff or full-time work?
I guess both.
With both. So I suppose, I guess, the thing I enjoy the least is probably not having much spare time.
I hear you. You
know, yeah, and that can, you know, I mean, it's great, you know, managing UX Club and working full-time as well, but having that work-life balance is, I suppose, getting even more trickier with having doing this. So I suppose that's, you know, the least fun out of it. But, you know, that's a challenge in itself to make sure that, you know, you have time to relax and have fun and, you know, see friends and whatnot. So that can be the biggest challenge. The thing I enjoy the most is, you know, owning my own business is a real buzz. You know, sort of having that creative freedom and that creative control and commercial control over how and what this product is really interesting to me. And both of my brothers do exactly the same thing. I've got two brothers and they both own their own businesses. So typically, since we were kids, we've always kind of been quite entrepreneurial, always wanted to start our own thing and, you know, own our own companies and kind of be the boss, I suppose, if that kind of makes sense. So yeah, that's a real buzz for me. That's what really like kind of gets me out of bed is, you know, thinking, what can I do with this product? How can I, you know, reach out to new customers and how can I make this content as good as it possibly can be?
Fantastic. That totally resonates with me. That's my favorite thing too. Just keeping my hands on the control of everything. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What is your next big thing?
So again, what for UX Club?
I guess so.
Yeah, for UX Club. We'll talk about this. Okay. So the next big thing for UX Club. So I think hopefully by the end of the year, we're going to be moving into a bit of a different commercial space. I think we're going to start charging for single courses instead of, you know, a monthly subscription. Well, I think, you you'll be able to do the monthly subscription as well, but we'll be adopting a similar model to things like Udemy and Icon Finder, where you can purchase the course on its own as well if you wanted to. I think this gives us the opportunity to reach out to people who would maybe want to buy a subscription from us, but they wouldn't necessarily want to watch all of our content. So a lot of our content on UX Club at the moment is focused at, you know, the beginner side of the industry, for people getting started in UX or thinking about it, etc. So by charging for single courses, you know, it would allow people to maybe come on and maybe purchase maybe a slightly more advanced course, or maybe something that was relevant to something that they'll be working on in their full-time jobs. And to us, this is a real, you know, shift in how the product works at the moment. And considering both myself and Casper, my business partner, my friend, we work on this part time. You know, that's going to take enough time to take us probably to the end of the year. And I suppose, on top of that, you know, it's filming as much content as we possibly can, and making sure that's as good as it possibly can be. But again, you know, with having full-time jobs as well, that can be quite a tricky balance to manage.
Yeah. You actually took one question right off my mouth, because I was going to ask, why did you decide to focus on a subscription model as opposed to per course, which I don't know whether it's better or worse in the long run. And that's a question.
Yeah. So I suppose to be perfectly honest, I mean, we didn't think about charging per course initially when we set the site up. You know, it just wasn't something that sort of came into our heads. You know, we thought the first and most accessible way for people to access our content on a paid subscription model would be a really low cost, low barrier to entry, monthly subscription fee, you know, similar to something like Spotify or Netflix. We used a few sites as kind of an example of a model that we were going for. One of them in particular was a site called Laracasts, which is a similar model to us. It's kind of regularly updated content focused at the Laravel community, which is basically a PHP framework.
And yeah, I know Ian Lensman pretty well.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, that site for us is a real source of inspiration. You know, we take a lot from that site, and, you know, we regularly talk to those guys. And for us, you know, they were doing extremely well by, you know, providing this model, this really simple monthly subscription model. Something as low as that, as $9, you know, is so easy to sort of write off in your own head. That's why we thought we would go with that. And, you know, from then it's been really useful for us. I think the fact that we want to introduce single course purchases for courses is not necessarily replacing that model. I think it's just adding to it. So hopefully for us, it will, you know, entice a whole new set of users to our content.
What kind of price range are you looking at for these new per course purchases?
We're not quite sure yet. We still need to do a little bit more research in that. I think there's a whole set of research for, you know, for how that, you know, for what prices would be most accessible for the user. And yeah, we're still kind of like neck deep in that.
Right. So going back to our main topic, which is video content production,
yeah.
I am amazed at the amount of content and the quality you have there.
Oh, thank you.
And I also watched the video how you do that, but our listeners haven't. Shall I link to that in the show notes, though?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that would be great.
So my question first was, why did you choose that model, which we'd already discussed? And the second question is, how do you line up and pick the topics that you want to cover with your training? Because, I mean, most people are scared by the technical part of it, the production, but it's,
yep.
I think it's half and half, and even the content part is even more challenging.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I've been lucky enough. Well, when I mentioned a minute ago that my brother had his own business, his business is film production. So it was kind of lucky there, because he owns his own film studio in a neighboring city to me. And when I sort of came up with the idea, you know, he was one of the first people that I talked to about it. And I said, let me use your studio for free. So, you know, of course, him being my brother, there was no way he could say no. So the first set of course material that we filmed was all at my brother's studio. So what that meant was I could get a set of keys and I could go in there whenever I wanted. At the weekends, in the evenings, I could spend 8 hours, 10 hours a day there and film this stuff. So there was no film studio fees. There was no, you know, lighting rig fees. There was no camera fees because I was using all of his equipment. And at that point, it was really just to test the concept, really, to see if the actual site would work. But obviously, the site needed some initial content to get it started. So I had the idea of going in there and filming, let's say, 10, I think, yeah, roughly 10 or 12 courses to kind of get the content started, which I could do for free. And then if that worked and that actually validated itself, then I could maybe, you know, start investing in my own equipment or go to a, you know, a studio that was maybe a little bit closer. But initially, it had to validate itself, right? So that's how we filmed the content initially. Now we film the content at Clear Left because they have their own film studios, meeting spaces in their building. So because I work there, I can use that and I can still get it for free. And then now I've just bought some of my own camera equipment. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting question because it's a lot, you know, I'm not a film director. I'm not a film producer. So for me, you know, there's a massive learning curve there with understanding what technology and what equipment I actually needed to make this happen. And how could I do that, you know, relatively cheaply, because you could spend thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds on camera equipment. So initially we tried this out with just filming with an iPhone, which actually worked really well for us because, you know, I have an iPhone in my pocket and I can get that out and start filming like straight away. But after a while, you know, you start realizing that obviously, well, okay, well, the quality of the footage that I'm getting on my iPhone could be a lot better. So, you know, again, once our initial content validated itself, that actually meant, right, okay, now, you know, now if I go out and buy a camera, I know that it will actually be worth me spending the money on it because I know people are buying the content. And that's kind of where we're at now. So, you know, initially the content was filmed with an iPhone and now we actually have some proper equipment that we can be proud of. And I think what's your second question was how we figure out what we're going to film next, right?
Oh, well, yeah. For the first 10 or 12 courses that you mentioned, how did you decide the topics?
Yeah.
And how do you decide on the topics for the upcoming content?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's another really good question. We have themes that we're trying to develop content for, because that is a... That's another kind of evolution of the site that will take place this year, hopefully, which will be learning tracks or learning paths, which is something that a lot of other sites do as well. And we've identified these six or seven learning paths. So, for example, you know, user research, information architecture, prototyping, wireframing, getting started in UX, these basic core themes of user experience that we think would be applicable to our users. So we've kind of identified these learning paths about 2 or 3 months ago, or maybe a little bit longer than that. And we develop content that we think will be applicable to these learning paths. So ultimately, by the end of the year, you'll see the site change and be more focused into these learning paths, which is another thing that I should have mentioned earlier. So that's how we figure out what we're going to be filming next. Because ultimately for us, you know, this content all has to sort of like fit into a little puzzle that we've got elsewhere. So that's how we figure out what we film next. Initially, what we thought of was, well, we know that we're targeting, again, the beginners of the user experience industry. So, you know, the content has to be very, you know, simple. Well, you know, it has to be very accessible. So, you know, the immediate kind of things that you think of is, right, well, how do I get a job as a UX designer? You know, what is UX design? You know, these very kind of elementary courses that kind of just get you started on these, you know, core themes of UX. Some other ones that we've done, you know, persona scenarios, you know, getting started with persona scenarios, getting started with wireframing, you know, these kind of really early topics. And another reason why we did that is because... if we film the very first course in that series, then the only way is up, so we can begin to scale that content as soon as we film the first one. So it's useless me going in there and saying, you know, advanced wireframing without me having filmed the first one first. You know, the user needs to, you know, understand the actual core concepts of what goes into a wireframe and why it's applicable and when you'd need to use it. After I've filmed that first one, then I can move on to something else, you know, and it's that kind of gives us that natural progression to our content and makes it a lot more accessible for our users.
Do you use any academic reference for building up your agenda? Because I know we're all, you know, experts here, but teaching that is a different story. So you just rarely can you come up with the list of topics out of your mind, you know, or experience.
Sure. Mm-hmm. We use a lot of, I use a lot of books for reference. So these are, you know, already validated, already proven in the field. A lot of our content is focused around concepts that have already been developed beforehand. We validate a lot of our, you know, of our filming on that. And then a lot of the other filming is just based on my own experience from things that I've done in the industry. So, you know, if it's something that I've experienced on a particular client project, then I'll want to share it with our users. If it's something that I think, you know, our users should be aware of, I think I'll share that as well. So it's a mixture of the two, really. It's a mixture of, you know, learnings that we've gotten from academia, from like books, videos, etc., talks, things like that. And then the other half is just my own personal experience.
Could you recommend our listeners a couple of books that you admire the most in the industry?
Sure. Well,
in case they prefer reading as a source of learning.
Yeah, massively. Well, my manager at work, he written, it was a few years ago now, so it's probably a little bit out of date, but it's a book called Undercover User Experience, and it's written by my manager, James Box. That's a really, really good book for people who are maybe working in smaller businesses that are kind of just beginning to invest in the UX process, or are kind of like struggling to convince their manager that it's a good idea, like this, you know, this kind of stuff. So they're kind of like really good guerrilla tactics for, you know, people to just get started in user experience. So I'd definitely recommend that.
Sounds great. Frankly speaking, I have not watched many of your videos, so I don't exactly know whether it's yourself standing up in front of the camera and reciting some theory, or are you showing some exercises, or how does it work?
Yep. So again, it's a bit of both. A lot of our more recent footage is more focused around actual interactive examples of things. So our most recent course, Value Proposition Design, is, you know, again, you know, it's more sort of, you know, talking the user through the entire process, like using a whiteboard, and it's just a bit more kind of interactive and a bit more interesting. Some of our courses are, you know, a lot more sort of like one-to-one. So it's, you know, going through a small presentation and it's, you know, just talking to the user directly. And then some of our other courses are, you know, screencasts, screen shares, things like that. So they'll be more focused on our technology courses, things like, you know, how to use Sketch, how to use Axure, things like this. And these ones will be screen share. So again, it's a mixture of pretty much everything. And, you know, that's also interesting because not everybody absorbs learning in the same way, right? Everybody kind of appreciates, you know, different ways of learning, and it's going to sink in for different people in different ways. So we try and mix it up and try and vary it as much as we possibly can.
When you just got started, did you know for sure you're going to do video training, or were you hesitant between different formats?
No, massively. Yeah, it had to be video training because that was the most interactive thing that we could offer the user. And again, thinking back to some of the businesses initially when we started that were really good inspirations for us, like Laracasts and, you know, a few other sites out there, you know, they're all video based. And I think that's the most personal way you can get, you know, to somebody, you know, get them learning about something is by video content. And, you know, also, yeah, it's kind of, you know, a double-edged sword because, you know, it's difficult and it takes a lot of time to do that. But I think it's the best way that you can sort of, you know, reach out to those people who want to learn about it.
Can you please walk us through the process? Let's imagine you have an idea for the course. You figured out what kind of format this is going to be, you know, screencast or yourself talking to the camera. What do you do next? Do you write a scenario and then follow it word by word? or anything else?
that's a really good question. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to prepare these courses. Initially, yeah, I have an idea, and like I mentioned a moment ago, I'll have an idea that will be focused around the theme or learning path that we're trying to achieve. And then from there, I start, you know, writing out a brief kind of structure of the course, what I'd actually like to cover, what needs filming in the studio, what could be, you know, a screencast, what could be a voiceover. So again, that is a lengthy process. And then, you know, I'll check and reference all of the information that I'm sharing, so make sure it's actually accurate. And then I'd probably give it a trial run before I actually film it. I'll actually go over it myself and, you know, try and think, does this actually make sense? Try and do that maybe once or twice and then go into the studio and then film it. And going into the studio, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll, you know, capture it all in one day. You know, it could just not work out. It could be a really tough day. You know, things could not be flowing and you might have to go back in there again. So the actual process from start to finish to film a course could take anything from 2 weeks to maybe 3.5 weeks to actually get, you know, that course from conception all the way through and uploading it onto the website, which again is also a really lengthy process, right? Because, you know, to render all of these videos and to actually upload them onto Vimeo can take a day, a couple of days in itself. So yeah, there's nothing quick about what we do for this course content. But again, the most important thing for us is to make sure that it's, you know, that it's accurate and that it's actually going to be teaching people something new and, you know, actually give them their money's worth.
Absolutely. Do you usually work on one course at once, or do you do like multiple together?
Just one course at once. I wouldn't have the time. I wouldn't have the time in the day. I'm already so stretched as it is. I wish I could. But no, normally it's just one. You know, I'll focus on one course. I'll aim to like get into the studio. You know, maybe a week or sort of like 10 days after I've started preparing the course and film it. And then, yeah, from there, it's kind of, you know, editing, uploading and so on and so forth. But yeah, generally about, yeah, 3, maybe even 4 weeks to get a course live.
And the course length in minutes is something, I don't know, can you give us a rough estimate? Like half an hour of amazing video altogether?
Yeah, so generally our courses, you know, the aim of our course content is to kind of be short and sharp and to the point. So our courses, I mean, most notably, anybody can recognize that, you know, they're not hours long. We don't film stuff that's 3-4 hours long. Instead, we keep the course material very focused. We keep it very short. And that is another kind of USP of our product, right? Is that, you know, our users want to come along and learn something new, maybe on their lunch break or, you know, maybe after work shortly, or maybe on the bus or the train home or something like that. So our course content is naturally short by definition, because we want our users to just get in there and learn what they want, and that's, you know, and that's it. So, you know, and that's, yeah, I mean, that's really what we, you know, that's been our sort of attitude towards it since the beginning.
And you also split the courses into really bite-sized small videos. That's intentional. Can you give us a little bit of back thought about it?
Yeah, well, again, I mean, you know, I mean, like I just said, really, I mean, you know, we keep the course content very, very short and very focused, because that's the nature of our product. The nature of our product is to sort of teach somebody new, something new about UX in a very short and focused environment, either on their lunch break or after work. And we know that, you know, our users are not going to have 3 or 4 hours spare to watch this content. So we like to keep it nice and short and focused.
As someone who has, like, I think I dipped my toes into video, but definitely never made it my full source of income or anything like that.
Yeah.
But could you give us, our listeners, some tips how to gain that confidence in front of camera or in front of a mic when you kind of know what you're talking about and you have it already mapped out, but you still need to figure out how to deliver it?
Yeah.
In a single take, you know, it's pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, the crux of it is you've got to know what you're talking about. If you don't know what you're talking about, then you're already off to a bad start. you know, yeah, I mean, to be in front of camera is not easy. And definitely the first few times that I had done it, you know, was awful. You know, I looked back on some of that footage, and I actually re-recorded about three or four of our courses before we actually launched the site, because, you know, quite frankly, I was so embarrassed with what I had filmed, not necessarily because of the content, but, you know, my demeanor and my, you know, my kind of personality on camera was not kind of where I wanted it to be. And it's something that definitely requires a lot of practice and a lot of work. You know, people, you know, get through to learning course material and content if they can sort of relate to the teacher, right? You know, like, nobody's going to sort of sit there and listen to a robot saying stuff. You know, they want to actually sort of feel a connection with the teacher, and they want that to be quite a personal relationship. So, you know, that requires, you know, a bit of personality, a bit of, you know, something different there that makes the course content a little bit more interesting. How you would actually develop that, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, just practice, just keep on doing it again and again and again. And I think you'll know in yourself, if you're watching this back, you'd think, yeah, I actually enjoyed watching that. You know, that was, you know, that was quite interesting. Or, you know, if you watch it back and you think, God, you know, this is still so awkward. I can, you know, I know that, that people won't really enjoy this. But that's, I mean, again, it's a really difficult process, you know, that kind of looking in the mirror and thinking like, oh God, I can do better than this. But the trick is not to take it personally, you know, like look at the content and just look at it subjectively. Even if you're on, you know, watching yourself or not, you know, if you watch it back and think this is just rubbish, you know, that's okay. That's okay. You haven't, you know, you've got time, you haven't shown it to anybody or whatever, you know, I can always go back and film it and I can improve upon it. And that's definitely the attitude to take with filming video content is, you know, don't take it too personally. I can always go back and improve on this. And when you share it with people, that's another really big step, right? You don't, you know, you're always worried about what people are going to think. But again, the trick is not to try not to take it personally. So, you know, you'll always have your critics. There'll always be people out there that will, you know, say, oh, this is rubbish, you know, oh, he's not very good and all this kind of stuff. But for every one person that says that, you'll have 10 people that say, I actually really enjoyed it and I learned something new. And, you know, this has been really useful for me. So again, it's just kind of treating the rough with the steady and just trying to go with it. Don't take it too seriously.
So when there is a type of a video lesson, when you just stare in the camera and stand up and say something for like 3 or 4 minutes in a row, do you have any tips or tricks? Like, where do you keep your secret hints, or how do you memorize the content, or do you actually just recite it from your heart?
Sure. Well, again, I think it's a mixture of a lot of things. You know, I don't use a teleprompter, which mm-hmm. is something that, you know, courses on Udemy and LinkedIn and things like that, they use a teleprompter to and Treehouse, obviously, you know, it's just all run off a teleprompter, and to me that kind of feels really impersonal. It feels really kind of staged, so I don't want to do that. A lot of the content that we do, you know, I memorize some of it, but I think, you know, the most interesting content is when you sort of, you know, just again, well, you know, like you're saying, is just kind of speak from the heart and try and speak from that experience and trust yourself and think, yeah, you know, this is a topic I've learned a lot about, and I've used this technique in work that I've done, and, you know, I'm confident about speaking about it, and kind of have that conviction in yourself that you know what you're talking about. And I guess just trying to, you know, riff on it naturally, I think, is the method that I prefer out of all of them.
Do you review the stats of your existing lessons, and how do you iterate on that data?
Yeah, massively. So we track all of that stuff. We have a control panel on the UX Club for us, obviously, called Kiosk, and we monitor all of the traffic through our lessons. We can see which ones are most popular, which ones are, you know, going to be more engaged with. And, you know, that helps us focus future course content as well. So if we sort of upload or film a new course and we see that it's not really taking off, or we see that it is taking off, that can help us direct what we're going to be filming next and so on and so forth. And it also helps us for marketing purposes as well. So we can see which ones are the most popular, and then we can try and, you know, get those out into our social channels and try and reach a new audience with it.
Such subscription services like yours often have the community component tied in. How do you focus on that? Because it looks like it's not your primary focus. Your primary focus is high quality, extraordinary content.
Mm. Oh, thank you. How do you mean the community aspect?
I mean forums, Slack rooms, stuff like that. Dedicated people and the curated process of them hanging out with you and your team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely something
like Fizzles is a great example. I'm sorry.
No. Please go on. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something we've thought of. You know, a forum or something like that. We thought would be really useful for people to speak to each other and you know learn from each other and to talk about the content and recommend content to each other and things like that. I think for us, it's more of a technical aspect of maintaining that. Can be very tricky. Again, because we both have full-time jobs, you know, our time is limited in terms of, you know, evolving the product as quickly and as efficiently as we probably would want to. So again, that kind of limits us, you know, relatively with things that we would like to try and achieve. And I think forum is maybe one of them. You know, so technically that's going to be quite a big thing to achieve. And secondly, I think, you know, you'd also want to, you'd want to know that you have the users that are going to fill that forum with some content, right? Like you don't want it to sort of be a ghost town and nobody say anything in there. And I think for us, you know, I don't think we're quite there yet with, you know, the user base, I suppose, you know, that kind of volume of user base that we think could fill that content, I suppose. So maybe in the future, yeah, is something we would definitely consider.
Mm-hmm. And my last question for you would be, as a UX designer, you've put a lot of thought into designing the front user-facing platform, the actual video site that displays that content. And you've done a really great job on that.
Thank you.
Can you give us a little bit thought about it?
So the actual style of the design, you mean?
Not just the style, but the way it functions. For example, sure. You opted out of thumbnails for the videos, I see, which saves you screen real estate and decisions like that.
Yeah. So again, you know, because I sort of pick at the design every day. You know, it's just one of those things when you've got your own painting in front of you, you're just like constantly touching it up and making it better. So it's a bit, you know, it can be a bit of a curse as well because I'm constantly changing things. But I mean, the design was, you know, yeah, I mean, it took a long time to get that design together. I mean, there are numerous decisions on there that, you know, I mean, there are hundreds of decisions on there that I could talk to you about right now. I'll take the homepage as an example, or, you know, and the course pages. The homepage, essentially what we're trying to achieve is just get people to the content as quickly as possible, right? That is the nature of our product. We want to get users engaged with the content as quickly as possible, but not necessarily just any user to any course. You know, we want to actually think about the user's mindset and really try and appreciate what they want to learn and, you know, how they're feeling at the time that they log onto our site. So, for example, one thing that we're going to be evolving the site into a lot more is this kind of mindset of the user, right? So they might log onto our site and feel particularly creative at that point, or they might want to sort of learn about something specific, like a bit of software, or they might be completely new to UX altogether. So we want to try and cater the content a little bit more based around these mindsets. So that's something you'll definitely see the site moving into a lot more this year. You know, besides that, I mean, there are loads of UI decisions that we've made. I mean, like you mentioned that we don't use thumbnails on the course material. A lot of these decisions are born out of, you know, technical considerations. So, for example, you know, if we had an image for every course, you know, that would increase the load time of the page and that would make it load slower. It would also mean that we have to come up with an image for each course, which
True.
You don't really think about initially,
exactly.
But it's kind of like, okay, what is that image going to be? Maybe it's just going to be an image of me at a whiteboard, but then how is that one going to be different from the one that I just filmed last month? I was at a whiteboard then, so you're going to have two images that are the same. You know, so it's all like these kind of decisions, you know. Yeah, I mean, I pander to these decisions, you know, day after day after day, like trying to make it look a lot better. And, you know, we're getting there slowly. We're currently uplifting the design again to cater for a lot of these product features and evolutions that we want to do this year. So it's going to be changing again pretty soon.
So thank you very much for such an amazing value-packed interview. I think it sheds a lot of light to people who just thinking about video training and producing it. Where can people find you online?
I'm on all the usual channels. I'm on Twitter, just at Ed Vinicum. I'm also on Dribbble. I share some of the stuff we're working on Dribbble, which is quite cool. So again, just at Ed Vinicum on Dribbble. And if anybody wanted to find out more or, you know, wanted to ask some questions, they're more than welcome to email me just at ed@uxclub.com. And that's about it.
Thank you so much. And once again, thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful day.
You're very welcome, Jane. Okay, speak to you later.